Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Neil Kulong in a few moments, and then Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press, final half hour. Grant Haley's going to join us on Thursday for the show. From the Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams. We're going to have Ben Simmons on the show, but he was a no-show. Just kidding. Just kidding. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Maybe the budget says pre-owned inventory. Well, you go to the place that has the Sunbury Motors guarantee. It makes all the difference. And a sales staff that will work with you. They have so much repeat business because they understand customer service. You're the focal point. And your trade-in's never been worth more. And it's really one-stop vehicle shopping because service department backs it all up. Routine maintenance, inspections, diagnostics. They take care of it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. You know, Matt, you were surprised at the Grant Haley get.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Trace McSorley is on tomorrow's show, by the way.
All right. Man, we got a good week
Try
going
to keep
here.
Matt on his toes and honest. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Kaprizov up high, goes to Zuccarello. Sends it back for Spurgeon. Down low, Boldy! Save Nedeljkovic, rebound, and score! It may have deflected in off of the goaltender, which would mean a hat trick for Boldy. His first in the NHL, first as a pro.
Yes, nothing like Minnesota Wild highlights to set the tone for the show, courtesy of Bally Sports. All right. Let's now turn our attention. There is no offseason for the outstanding Neil Kulong. Sir, welcome.
Always great to be here. We're happy to get underway the business season. This is really kind of our first time to talk since the start of that, and I'm ready to go.
All right. New offensive line hire and a defensive coordinator that was elevated on the Steelers staff. So let's go offensive line first. Your thoughts on bringing in the Carolina Panthers offensive line coach after watching the Carolina Panthers put together the season they did?
A couple seasons that they have.
Yeah.
I guess in a way, you kind of look for, I pardon the expression, but sometimes one man's trash is another man's treasure. You know, I'm not sure. The thing of it is, it's not as narrowly funneled the way I think most people view the league to be when it comes to position coaches. It's fit, and your team is not stagnant. It is constantly changing. It is constantly evolving. They're doing a lot of little things that you might not notice. As far as an offense goes, there's 9 trillion different things that you could do, and blocking patterns and habits, usually that's something that the offensive coordinator, with the direction usually of the head coach and the general manager, is setting up because they want to highlight these types of things on their team. That could be a one-year thing. That could be a for the foreseeable future thing. It could be getting back to something that they used to do that they found that they wanted to do more. They bring in somebody that has good insight, and they have, you know, maybe some connection with this coach who does it a certain way. It could be any one of these things or absolutely no reason at all. So with that, again, I'll throw myself at your mercy here. I can't tell you why they hired Pat Meyer. I don't know enough about the guy to say he's this or that or the other thing. What I know is he's been an offensive line coach to some level for roughly 20 years. So with that, you like to think that he's probably got a pretty good sense of what he's doing and how things work. They trust enough to say, you know, I'd imagine they sat and talked to him and asked him, you know, beyond his years of experience, what he likes to see. Usually they know about these interviews in advance. They study what's there. They ask him for a plan on what they want to do to improve this player or that player. Maybe something about what he sees around the rest of the league. Schematic, strategic kinds of things. If they see eye to eye with him, if he's somebody that they feel will coach and execute to the vision that they've provided him, that's usually the guy that gets the job. If that didn't work out for him in Carolina and the Chargers before that, okay. Doesn't mean he can't do anything here. I just think that it's a very important hire. Your offensive line coach is probably the third or fourth most powerful coach on your team and usually is somebody that's held in very high regard as far as what they're doing. You have to listen to your offensive line coach. You don't make that decision lightly, but fans don't know the reasons why they would have hired this coach or that coach. Doesn't mean that he is better or worse than anybody else that we know of. It's that he was the best fit in their judgment at the time.
Which gets us to Terrell Austin. Now, I felt he has been groomed to get to this spot to be the DC. Do you look at it the same way?
Yeah, I think he was. I think they brought in a defensive coordinator who at the time, granted, was coming off a pretty rough going in Cincinnati.
Anybody would have had a rough go in Cincinnati with those players back then.
Right. He didn't have much. They were still kind of rebuilding to what they would eventually become, and the direction wasn't working. Getting back to the point that I was making with the offensive line coach, a lot of times it's just a fit. You know, what he's coaching and what he's doing is working or not working for the group that they have right now. That does not mean he doesn't have value. Because you flip it around, he had talent in Detroit, and the Detroit teams that Austin had were really good defensively. Mm-hmm. You can see why he's still in the conversation. Just take it for what it is. He's got defensive coordinator experience with two different teams, maybe different levels of success, but it kind of gives you a high and a low of, you know, what he's capable of doing. And then on top of that, with the Steelers, you've got 3 years of, you know, seems like anyway, increases in title and responsibility and success to match. We talked back in the day how bad the Steelers secondary was. Austin got there, and we saw things improve pretty quick. They put time and effort into figuring out their secondary, making it more modern, bringing in more players from all over. They had to really emphasize free agency because they weren't drafting him particularly well. He's there for the Minka Fitzpatrick deal. We saw Terrell Edmonds go from, you know, pretty much a dog his rookie year to a pretty solid player who's going to get paid pretty well in free agency coming up here. You know, maybe the rise and fall of some cornerbacks, but overseeing the secondary the way that he was, you saw top to bottom a pretty substantial level of improvement. And you have to like that, along with the fact that he's been experienced. He has experience as a defensive coordinator. He's had success in doing that, and he knows the team at a very good level. You have to be very comfortable with that. And I think that said, they have been grooming him for, you know, that eventuality. The X that we would need to solve to really answer that would be, were they aware that Keith Butler was going to be done by this time? Was that something they knew ahead of time? Maybe, maybe not. I like to think that more often than not, a guy doesn't show up and just tell them for the first time ever he's retiring. You know, I think they probably had a sense that it was coming at some point, and they wanted to keep Austin around, you know, for the impending departure of Keith Butler, a guy that, you know, didn't seem like they were interested in letting go anyway. So they have some continuity in place for a team that, you know, needs to probably get a little bit better defensively, but has a lot of good pieces in place. And I think Austin provides the right amount of continuity along with, you know, the right kind of experience to maybe approach the issues that we saw from them, especially in the second half of the year, in a different way than what they did this past season.
What did you think of the Super Bowl?
Honestly, I thought it was one of the more enjoyable Super Bowls I've seen. I think it was one of the more enjoyable games I watched this season. And I'll tell you why. This is my favorite part of it. It's nice to see, part of this too, is seeing the fans, you know, start gnashing their teeth over the fact that it wasn't 40-37 with a 55-yard field goal and overtime to end it. I love the fact that it took absolutely everything the Rams had to drive the field on a Bengals defense that, frankly, didn't get a lick of credit throughout the playoffs. Everything was Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow didn't play particularly well Sunday, okay? It, to me, it didn't look any different than any other game he played this year. It's just they didn't get the ball at the end, or they got the ball at the end and got stopped. And that was kind of the key thing. The Rams got the touchdown at the end, and it took a lot for them. I'm not going to get into officiating. It took a lot for them to get that ball in that end zone.
It was still 15 plays, yeah.
Yeah, they had to go a long way, the hard way to do it. Defensive battle. And then the Rams just completely wipe out the Bengals pretty much right away into to their final drive. Defense won the game. Aaron Donald, is he the MVP if they don't close voting with 2 minutes to go? Maybe. Wouldn't surprise me. I'll say that. But you got an MVP performance from the best player on the field. I enjoy the fact that it happened the way that it did, because it's not what's become, in my opinion, just very cliche. You know, let's everybody score a bunch of points. Let's go into overtime with both defenses completely gassed, and then have them, you know, one bad turnover sets up a very long field goal to end the game. But to me, that's just boring. I like to see a sack, or, you know, a very close to a sack, a forced incompletion on the final play. To close it out. I as a defensive guy, I really enjoyed it. It was a great game.
I knew, everybody has known, because of the rules, they couldn't announce Kevin O'Connell as the head coach of the Vikings until the Rams were done. It's a ridiculous rule, but still a rule. But, I mean, I was literally just in Minneapolis. He's the offensive coordinator of the Rams. Which play did he call?
Great question.
and I'm not saying, I'm sure he's a terrific coach. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's you know, we've talked about play calling, too. I think that there's so much of an emphasis is put on that. And I heard a really interesting point made, incidentally, by Minneapolis media when they were talking about O'Connell coming in as far as play calling goes. If you haven't had the play calling experience, my thought generally is, okay, well, then you know how to not call plays. Why don't you hire somebody to call the plays?
Right, exactly.
You know, do you need to as a head coach? Why is it a requirement? It never was before.
Right.
Really, it's just a way to bring in the highest and best strength, allegedly, of whoever the coordinator is, and justify maybe paying him a little bit more. What that means is paying the coordinator you hire a little bit less, because he's not going to call the plays. Different motivation there than he's not able to do it. I'm sure he's called plays before, you know. It's not a question of that. It is a fair point to say, if you haven't done it, you pass him by in the hallway, you know, are you still pumping him up when you're the one answering the questions about it,
right,
and not the guy who actually called the play?
Right.
How do you handle that? Does that create friction? Is there something? I can see that. That's a fair,
right,
point. I think that's something to look at. But it's also something that the amount of money that's getting paid for a guy that's, you know, relatively very young, coming into a position he's never had before, you've got a mountain of those problems.
Right.
Okay. Add another one onto the pile. You may as well at that point. There's a lot of things you're going to have to figure out. First year, first time head coaches have those kinds of struggles before they kind of figure out what they need to do. I remember on this space ripping Zach Taylor, into next year over the stuff that he did his first year, and he came from the same team. So, to,
right,
be honest, I think you see in McConnell, who I remember getting drafted back in,
right,
the last time the Steelers were good.
Right.
that's how old I'm getting now. But he came up a very similar way. You have to kind of think he's probably going to have similar types of struggles. It doesn't mean that there aren't good things that he brings, but learning how to coach a team, learning how to manage the whole team,
right,
is vastly different than calling plays on Sunday. That is
no
not
doubt
the highest and best use of the head coach. Whether he's calling plays or not, that is not their primary function. There are so many things that go into that, and most of it is delegating, holding people accountable, pumping people up. You know, not to be the 9 trillionth person to jump on Sean McVay's bandwagon, but that's his brilliance. That's where he is the best.
Mm-hmm.
He puts so much of himself into those kinds of details. It's not about calling the plays for him. He is a part of everything else that goes on. He's a lot more expressive about it, probably. Mm-hmm. Talks a lot more about it. That's why you automatically go to him and think that he's a guy that's doing all these things. Every coach is like that. They just don't all reveal as much, I think, as McVay does. But obviously, he's done a great job. You know, if you look at his track record so far, there's not a thing that you can complain about. O'Connell having a front row seat to right. that, I think, can help. But when the rubber meets the road, there's only one Belichick. There's only one Andy Reid. There's only one Sean McVay. There's only going to be one Kevin O'Connell. You know, he's going to have to figure out for him what is going to work. And to me, that's not something you're going to figure out in one off season before kicking off in September.
Well, there's only one Neil Coulong, and we're lucky we get him every week. So,
yeah, I'm told often how lucky everyone is that there's only one.
Oh, believe me, around here it's like, in fact, they think there's one too many of me. All right,
we're a match made in heaven. That's it,
sir. Always, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong, and yes, there's only one Matt Catrillo, and we've got him. How about that?
We are rocking and rolling this week.
Doesn't sound like Matt's too happy to be here.
No, it works for me.
Quiet today. All right. Take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Final half hour, Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press. Trace McSorley tomorrow on the show. Grant Haley of the Rams on Thursday. It may be an abbreviated show on Thursday because we're only going to go to 3:30 with Penn State basketball, that makeup game with Minnesota, but we're going to make that half hour count with Grant Haley of the Rams as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
For me, it was just making sure mentally I was right to get out there and play again. So that's something I've been, you know, dealing with. And it wasn't about the fans or coaches or comments made by anybody. It was just a personal thing for me. That was earlier than, you know, that series or even that season that I was dealing with, you know, and that organization knew that. So it was something that, you know, I continue to deal with, and, you know, I'm getting there and getting to the right place to, you know, get back on the floor.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
And you wonder why you left your place.
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say, Ben.
So you're not buying?
No. I'm actually impressed that he's trying to get back for the game in Philly.
Well, there he is.
I'm actually impressed that he's getting back. He's trying to get back for the game in Philly, but I'll still believe that when I see it. So yeah, no, not buying anything.
Well, it's. It's probably something we need to get into here on the show at some point. We don't have the time frame to do it now. We talked a little bit about it when Simone Biles went through it. And about dealing with it, because he was alluding to mental health issues in Philadelphia. And at some point, we need to get into, I mean, athletes are expected. I know Chloe Kim was talking about this, I think it was yesterday, about everyone thinks we have to be perfect, and we aren't. It's funny, because, I mean, with the stat being the Sue claimed he was, I don't know.
My almighty!
And the burden and the pressure that they have to be perfect is certainly there, but there's also something that asked me, but there's a lot of people that face pressure all the time. They just aren't athletes. I mean, let's just go down the road to Danville, to Geisinger. Imagine the pressure being felt by every parent in that ward right now. I mean, there's different kinds of pressure.
that had to be recognized by all of us along the way. Hey, another big day at the Olympics. The 15-year-old Valieva, she's the leader. After the short program, just what the Olympics needed.
Raise your hand if you saw that coming.
Holy mackerel, here we go. Like, we now, if she's on the podium, they won't have a ceremony. So it was like, okay, don't look over here. Nothing happened. This is what the suit supports.
That's the theme of the IOC. Nothing to see here.
This is what the suit supports. I mean, really. They asked a couple of the athletes if they were up for the games. They said they were up all week.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a service department that backs it all up. Diagnostics, routine, inspections. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Trace McSorley on the show tomorrow. Grant Haley, an abbreviated show on Thursday, but we're going to make it worth it because we're going to get Grant Haley of the Rams on. Now, there were conditions to getting him on.
I think I know what they might have been.
There was only one.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit.
It was all about legalities, all about legalities, all of it. He said, Steve, I'll do it. He says, you know, I appreciate you. I said, yeah, I know. He said, but that suit, dude. I said, nowhere near the building. I mean, even in California, he was hesitant to call because of it, because he was afraid he'd pick up the phone. Hi there, suit here. Oh, jeez. I wonder if he ever answers the phone that way.
That's as bad as the IOC.
Jeez, no offense. I probably would take the suit over both FIFA or the IOC.
Yeah, that's true. That was low blow for me.
Yeah, that is low. I mean, that is low. So to be honest with you, I mean, if it's a race between those three, the suit finishes first. Then after that, we can debate between FIFA and the IOC. See, I bailed Jed on that one.
Yes, you did.
Had to. No choice.
Always got my back. I appreciate it.
No, I have to have your back. All right, so now let's bring in, with Penn State playing Michigan State tonight, the pride of Butler, Pennsylvania. And that is Chris Solari, Detroit Free Press. They got Butler in there. We're good. All right, so Michigan State is interesting. They're 18-6, but I haven't felt like, you know, with Michigan State over the years, they've just been times they've been so dominant. But they were dominant Saturday. Why?
Well, they got good point guard play, and that's been kind of the rub here for the last 2 years, in all honesty. I mean, yeah, it's hard to replace a guy like Cassius Winston.
Sure.
We all know that. I mean,
yep.
That's a generational kind of guy within a program. But, you know, last year they struggled with trying to move Rocket Watts into that, and he's now at Mississippi State, and they Foster Lawyer probably at a better level for his physical abilities at Davidson now. Having a great year there,
mm-hmm.
but,
yeah.
You know, he wasn't kind of that big kind of guard that you see in the Big Ten. And, you know, Izzo goes out in the portal and picked up Tyson Walker, and he came in from Northeastern, and I think he's had an adjustment period to the physicality and size in the Big Ten. I mean, it's, you know, it's this is a kid who, when he was at Northeastern, was able to get his shot, get whatever he wanted to do, you know, a lot of times. And, you know, in his one-off games against Power 5 competition looked really good. And I think he had a monster game against North Carolina that kind of,
yes,
a year ago, pushed him into this. But the day-to-day grind is what is different in the Big Ten. And, you know, Izzo switched, you know, Walker had started all the first 23 games and, you know, kind of right away. He hasn't been bad. I think that's kind of the one thing. He hasn't been bad, but it's the adjustment period. And there's points where he, you know, the physicality and the length of the guards overwhelmed him.
Yep.
And he switched to A.J. Hogarth from out in Coatesville,
mm-hmm.
which is a rare thing. I mean, you know, first of all, you don't have a lot of kids coming out of a lot of these Pennsylvania schools into the Big Ten outside of the region. There are very few. I mean, I can think of right now there's A.J. Hogarth, there's Ethan Morton from Butler out at Purdue.
Yep.
And I think of the Shibwe kid who's down at Kentucky, who really isn't from here, but he played his last 2 years at Kennedy Christian, so we always adopt them.
You know, sure.
But Hogarth provides kind of a physical, he's 6'4", 210, he gets north and south, and he looks to pass. So he can score at the rim and in traffic, but he's also, you know, when teams kind of respect that, he's able to kick out and do some things. And he's had moments coming off the bench where he's played out of control, and those roles switching with him and Walker clicked. Something clicked where they both look, you know, Walker was looking for his shot more, and I think he finished 5 of 10 and was shooting from outside. Hogarth finished with 15 points and got ejected, which I can't. I
was going to ask you about that because I saw the, because, you know, when you see he got ejected, you're like, well, I have to watch this. Chris, I don't get it. What, number one, I don't get it.
We're all kind of perplexed by this. First of all, I mean, he had a tech early in the game. There was a double technical or something along those lines that, you know, probably was a bad call in the moment as it was. But then, All he was doing was standing and clapping and looking at Michigan State's bench, but it was pretty clearly directed at Xavier Johnson. And
Mike Woodson.
Yeah, Mike Woodson kind of went off a little bit, and that drew the technical. But I watched it back, and none of us, I mean, until he was getting escorted to the locker room on the baseline, we had no idea that had even happened.
Chris, I detect Mike Woodson.
Yeah,
I wouldn't attack the kid. I'd attack the coach. Like, get back to
me. And he had already had one, too.
Yeah, you're the adult. Go back.
Yeah, so it was just a bizarre moment. And we were trying to think of last time we could think of any Michigan State players getting ejected. Like, I can't even remember the last time Tom Izzo got ejected, let alone one of his players. So,
sure.
That was just a weird circumstance. But that's what they found. I think that kind of elevated everybody else around them. And Malik Hall continues to kind of become a lot more.
Man, he is. You know what? I've been a big Malik Hall guy since day one. You know, I mean, he may not be the star, like, but yeah, I always felt like every time he came in the game, it's like, okay, he's a problem. I see him this year. And it just seems like he's embracing more minutes and doing it in such a way where he's really inside and out is a tough handle.
Yeah, and he has been, you know, a real deadeye from outside. And I think that's kind of helped him quite a bit. I mean, he had the big game his freshman year. I think it was at Seton Hall where he hit, I think, six threes or something like that.
Yeah.
Where people were like, wow, this kid looks like a burgeoning star, but consistency has been his issue. You know, that's been the big thing. And he hasn't started a game. He's come off the bench every game. And, you know, first of all, from a captain standpoint, that's, I think, tremendous leadership. And we've asked him about it, you know, if he would, you know, because I thought maybe the two moves that I thought Izzo would do before that Indiana game was either swap his point guards in the lineup,
yep.
And potentially try and go small and bring Bingham off the bench. But I didn't think he would do both. I thought it would be, you know, let's try one thing. Let's not, you know, blow up everything. It was still a 17-win team at that point.
Right.
And, you know, but Hall and Hauser have done a good job of balancing their minutes, and I think Hall's starting to get more minutes. Hauser has been, you know, because he's not necessarily been the guy that people expected coming from Marquette.
But he's been better of late, though.
He has had a quietly solid season. He's improved defensively from a year ago. He's really been aggressive at getting to the boards, and you know, I think particularly the offensive glass. I mean, I think he's been Michigan State's best offensive rebounding presence. And he's scrapped. I mean, he's just been a quiet, you know, hit some shots here and there, and not have to worry about being the guy like I think he was kind of projected to be, particularly after his Wisconsin game last year when he had like 27.
Right.
But you know, I think that's helped Hall, though, just coming off the bench. And I think that's partly with Walker coming off the bench. Now you got a couple guys with Walker, with Hall, and then, you know, you bring the energy off the bench with Jaden Akins and the size with Julius Marble. It gives them, I think, a more complete second wave, in all honesty. And that's something that Izzo has talked about. And he talked about that with Purdue. He said that, you know, Purdue is like Noah's Ark. They've got two of everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what he wants Michigan State to be, to have that second wave to be able to kind of come at and blitz some teams off the bench. And I think they got 44 points off the bench in that game against Indiana.
Yeah, they did. When they played Penn State back in December, now obviously, you know, this is 2 months ago. But what impressed me about Michigan State was not just how they cut, but how quickly they cut. And Penn State really struggled with the speed with which Michigan State cut. Are they still 2 months later still cutting that way with that same kind of precision?
Well, I think that's been the inconsistency. You know, I think you've seen that with Max Christie and Gabe Brown in particular. I mean, you know, they're not necessarily coming off the screens as hard, and you know, some of it's a little bit of fatigue because those two guys have been relied upon so much on the defensive end that, you know, from Brown's standpoint, his shot has been off pretty much since the early part of January. He had a big game at Rutgers, but that's been about it for him. And Christie and Izzo talked about this yesterday. He kind of hit a little bit of the freshman wall because of, I mean, he's playing 30 some minutes a game and oftentimes finds himself on the opponent's best offensive threat, which is amazing for a freshman. But you know, that's, I think that at the times hindered his shot. He only took 1-3 right against Indiana, and that's a kid that needs to be taken 4-5
exactly,
6-3. So that's, but I do think the cutting coming off screens and getting there for those two guys in particular is big, and that's something that they're trying to get a little more because they want those two guys to get more shots.
Tom's had obviously not just a couple of good, he's had some great teams over the years. Then there was a point where he had like a one and done here and a one and done there. I mean, Miles Bridges should have been a one and done, but he was a two and done. Even Tom was confused by that. to be honest with you.
And Jaren Jackson was almost a two and done.
Exactly. But this is a team, with all due respect, that doesn't have pros on it. I mean, yeah, they'll be pros, but they're not going to, you know, we're not talking about first-round picks or anything like that. Is this more his kind of team in some ways?
I think so. Christie's probably the one guy.
Yeah, eventually.
I mean, you know, you look at a lot of mock drafts right now, they've got him towards the back end of the first round, but you sit there and watch him on the court and you see that this kid needs another year in the weight room to really push himself. He could push himself into the lottery with his shot and his willingness to shoot. And, you know, his mom played women's basketball at Northwestern as an All-American star there. And, you know, that she's, I believe, a psychologist. So there's a lot of educational benefits, I think, that the family sees.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked to see him stay a second year. I don't think there's any rush for him to get to the NBA, but that's the one guy where you look at and you say, this is a kid that could be a pro. I mean, the rest of these guys, Bingham, you know, Bingham struggled to put on weight for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, there's wonders if maybe guys like Bingham and maybe Brown and maybe Hauser come back for another year next year because they got that extra year. But no, I mean, Hogarth is an interesting case. you know, I think he's going to have to be a developmental guy over the next couple of years, but he's not a first-round guy. I mean, that's – I don't know if this is – believe me, if he loved those teams with that team, particularly with Brown – or with Bridges and Jaren Jackson and Cassius Winston and Langford, you know, when that team was at its best, that may have been one of his more talented teams.
No same doubt.
Same with the 16 team that had Denzel Valentine and Bryn Forbes and all those guys. So, you know, that, I think that, you know, you think about the team. He likes four-year guys, though. And, you know, we're not living in a four-year guy kind of world, sadly.
Yeah, it's the Mike Bray theory.
Yeah.
Yep, let's stay old. And, you know, and to be honest with you, I've started to perfect that. Well, that's a personal thing. No.
I hear you. I'm creeping.
How do you look at, you know, the coming off the really a terrific performance against Indiana? How do you view tonight? I mean, do you know on a night-by-night basis what you're going to get?
No idea. I mean, you know, there are times where you think you know, and then, you know, something like the turnovers will come up again and kind of take them out of a rhythm, or you know, they'll miss some critical free throws. I think they've improved dramatically on free throws since January. I mean, they were at 71.4%.
78 now.
And they're almost at 82 or 83% in the Big Ten.
Yeah, which is
astounding. But
they're getting 21% of their points in the conference from the free throw line.
And I think that's what this team sees and recognizes and realizes. Well, this is Malik Hall said it perfectly. He's like, this is free money.
Yeah.
You know? And if you've got the ability to get to the rim and get fouled, do it. And so I think they're starting to grasp and embrace that, and that takes that toughness that Izzo's been trying to get at. But that toughness has been wavering up and down, too. It's, you know, and I think, you know, Tom's talked about this across the board in the conference, that, you know, we've seen that. I mean, if you look, was it four losses right now at the top of the league?
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be a dogfight down the stretch here. I think a lot of teams have had that same issue of consistency or performance. So that's something that they've been trying to get more of. But you really don't know. Sometimes it'll be Walker having an okay game, and sometimes it'll be Hogard, sometimes Hall. So they don't necessarily have a go-to guy, but they have a lot of guys who can be at any given moment. And, you know, tonight, I think that they want to get back to running the ball. I know they ran the ball really well in transition against Penn State the first time.
They did.
And I know Mike has done a good job of trying to correct that, too. And they've become a hard team to play against. And, you know, it's amazing to me the depth of the Big Ten right now, because Penn State's playing everybody hard. Rutgers has improved markedly.
Yep.
Even Nebraska and Minnesota are tough gets. So, Northwestern, another veteran, experienced team where you see the age does matter. So it's going to be a wild final month here. Nothing would surprise me. There are very few times right now that I think I'd be – if Nebraska jumps up and bites Purdue, that might be the one game where I'd be like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But everybody else right now, I think, is
pretty well-versed. Yeah, Maryland almost did that.
Yeah.
And Maryland has not really been playing well. Maryland came off a blowout at home at the hands of Iowa and went to Purdue and took them to the final seconds.
Yeah, you can't – Danny Manning's had that team playing really well. I know Izzo really likes what he's seen from Manning, and it'll be interesting to see if he gets that job permanently. But, you know, that's – listen, we know this happens in the Big Ten every year, and we also know that come March – you know, or, you know, this part of February on to March, someone usually separates themselves. I'm not sure this year that there's one team other than maybe Purdue and Illinois that I can look at and say this team could separate itself. So, I mean, this could be a dogfight into the last weekend. It still might, even with those two teams.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much. The pride of Butler.
One of the pride of Butler. I would not take it all on my responsibility myself.
Just, you know, well, if I had Ethan Morton on the show, I would have said the same to him.
Oh, good. Looking forward to that. You know, my friend Matt Clement, we grew up together.
Yeah.
He coached Ethan.
Ah.
And, you know, he's been the basketball coach at Butler for a long time. And Ryan, Ethan's dad, was supposed to graduate with us, but went to a – I think our – eighth grade year, went to a rural school. So had some really good teams back then that we were part of. And me being, of course, the end of the bench on the JV team when we won the Whippeel. I still got, hey, I got a Whippeel ring out of it.
Hey! Hey, you could look, years from now, you can tell them about I had 30 against somebody. Nobody will know.
I had a 4-point play. That's my claim to fame.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Take me through the play. No, seriously, take me through the play.
Oh, sure. Okay. You want to? Okay.
Yeah.
3-on-1 break.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the game, and I had two guys open with the ball in my hands, and I pulled up for a three, got knocked over backwards, and yelled at for not passing the ball. Ball went through, hit the free throw, 4-point play. I got a box score of it, and it will live in infamy.
And there you go.
That's the basketball highlight of my life.
Has there ever been a show that's asked you about that?
No. There are very few places that even know that exists.
First for everything.
I'll when I get home, I'll take a picture of that box score and send it to you.
Please, I want it. Chris, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Take it easy, man.
You too. Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press. Hey, you have to have some fun on the show. You know, and after talking about the suit leading in, where it kind of felt like it just sucked all the fun out of the room, we had to do something like that.
No, senor!
We need a break. Si, senor. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.